But all that to say is I think that the reason that a Sabbath day is not enjoined on God's people in the New Testament is because we are supposed to be at rest all the time, that that's a requirement. That rest is a task, right? It's why he says, make every effort to enter into God's rest.
Living by faith is rest.
Right.
Rest in God, trust, leaving it in God's hands.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to the Faith Recovery Podcast. I'm Kent.
I'm Nathan.
We are seeking to recover faith by recovering the faith. We're in a series called The Voice of the Shepherd, and we're saying that the voice of the shepherd sounds like the gospel. Mm. It's applied to life. He's speaking to us this message of death to life, this message of self-denial, of entrusting ourselves to God, of, you know, all the themes of the gospel are what he's saying to us all the time and how it applies, and applying the gospel in daily life in the choices that we face is being obedient to the gospel. So being obedient to the gospel is not just believing it at the beginning, but it's believing it day by day, working it out, its implications day by day. Hmm. And last week we talked about technology, use of technology and social media. Somewhere in that episode, Nathan actually said something about today's topic. He was saying that, you know, doom scrolling on social media is not truly refreshing, probably not a helpful use of technology. We're free to use technology, but we're called to use it in ways that are helpful and not be in, mastered by technology. So he made this point about how social media doom scrolling is not truly refreshing. And he said then that we need to be refreshed. We need leisure. Leisure is important. We need to be refreshed so that we can return to the work be effective. And so today's topic is leisure. And or hobbies, you know, just these extracurricular activities that we've got.
Yeah, just a tough one for me, Kent. I'm lean on you. I just never have been good at giving myself permission to rest even a lot of the time. And yet, I do think that the gospel has some things to say about that, you know. And this may sound strange, but if we get to the heart of the gospel, you know, we talk a lot about the bread in Jesus' passion. When I say bread, I mean that there's a slice that's the crucifixion and there's a slice that's the resurrection, but we don't talk about the middle, what's in between. Mm. And depending on the timeline, you know, if you compare the Gospel of John to the synoptics, there's a little bit of discrepancy as to what day Jesus died on. And how long he was in the tomb. I know that the general consensus is that he died on Friday. So was it about 3 p.m. on a Friday? Mm-hmm. Would that be right? And yet, you know, and we think that because there's a mention of a Sabbath and the preparation for the Sabbath. And, you know, he's interred in the tomb kind of hastily in this 3 hours, I guess, they've got before sundown to put him in there, and then they come back on, so they're gone for Saturday because it's Sabbath and they're not supposed to do any kind of work, and then they come back on Sunday morning and
at dawn on the first day of the week.
Right. Okay. So that would be Sunday morning for those of you who think Sunday's the Sabbath, but I don't think there are many people think that anymore. But at any rate, so that makes perfect sense, right? Yet Jesus, he spoke of being in the heart of the earth 3 days. That sort of is 3 days. I mean, it's not 72 hours by any means, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not even 48 hours, I don't guess. And so, you know, there may be some discrepancy. But the book of John seems to indicate that it was that Jesus died on a Thursday, was buried on that Thursday afternoon, and then rose on the first day of the week, just like everybody else, which makes it a solid 3 days, you know. Mm-hmm. Because and the reason the mention of the Sabbath has to do with the fact that it was the Passover, and there's this, you know, the end of the Passover, that seventh day of the Passover was a special feast day or a rest day, a special Sabbath. you know, that the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread would have been a Sabbath. So there would have been two Sabbaths stacked. Friday would have been a Sabbath, and Saturday would have been a Sabbath. Mm. all that to say that Jesus took a Sabbath rest, if you will. Now, you know, we may not think of it that way, being in the grave, but, you know, our human selves are finite, we're limited, we can die, things like that. Just the theme of death and resurrection is very, you know, is kind of reenacted every day as we have this diurnal pattern, you know, and we go into unconsciousness or whatever, you know, inaction, and then awaken to move again, right? Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that one affirmation of the gospel is that God is working while we rest. That the outcome is not on us to anything, really, and that if we completely abdicate for a period, things will still be fine. I don't know. What do you think of that?
Well, this whole idea of Sabbath, right? It goes back to the beginning. It goes back to creation. On the seventh day, God rested from all the work that he had done. And then, of course, it's built into the Jewish law. They are required to rest for a day because God rested. And that, and then I wonder what you would say is the precise Christian application, because now we're not under law and we're not obligated to obey a Sabbath, although some people do it like because it's wise, because it's a good practice, but we're not you know, we're not obligated to do it in the way that the Jews were obligated to do it. What's the New Testament say about like what Sabbath means now? Doesn't it say Jesus entered into his rest at his exaltation? Is that what Hebrews says?
Yeah, it says
At his ascension to heaven.
I think that I can't remember the exact wording, but there is a treatment of Sabbath in Hebrews, and Hebrews 4, he makes a case in speaking of, I'm trying to remember which psalm it is, but one of the psalms, let's say, he says, where today, if you hear his voice, do not harden as in the rebellion, harden your hearts as in the rebellion. And then it says, For who were those who heard and yet rebelled? Was it not all those who left Egypt, led by Moses, and with whom was he provoked for 40 years? Was it not those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness, and to whom did he swear that they would not enter into his rest? But those who were disobedient, we see they were unable to enter because of unbelief. And then he says, therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear, lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it, the ESV says. So,
so there, the promise of entering his rest is a future rest, and somewhere in there it says there's a future rest for the people of God.
Yeah, well, and it was future for the psalmist. You know, he's saying, look, if Joshua had given them rest, why would he speak of another day? So, Psalm 95:1-7 is the section that the author of Hebrews is quoting, right? And he says, therefore, the Holy Spirit says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart as in the rebellion on the day of testing in the wilderness. and then he says, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. He says, take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil and unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. But exhort one another every day, as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. So, there's this call to enter into God's rest. Now, I would suggest, just from the overarching theme of Hebrews, that that the call here is that we might enter into his rest currently and might make every effort to enter into his rest now, so that those of us who are in his rest will, you know, enter that final rest. That would be my suggestion, and the reason I say that is because the theme of Hebrews is that we not return to dead works, he says, right? So there's a real concern, I think, on the part of this writer, maybe a twofold concern. One is, here are people who've been dislodged from their ritual, you know, and maybe they're in danger of falling into one of two ditches. One ditch being going full on into hedonism, license, you know, in the Gentile world. So this barrier, this balustrade, was very rigid for them, has now been made permeable mm-hmm. between themselves and the Gentile world. I don't think these are diaspora Jews. It seems that he's writing to Judean Jews from outside that area. So there's less risk of it. But, you know, one concern is that they might be disobedient. But it could be, as Paul does, you know, it could be that he's just turning everything on its ear and suggesting that going back into this legalistic approach, being pressured by your society, as they obviously were, to renounce Christ, quit meeting with the Christian group, return to just a more kosher observant form of Judaism. It could be that he's, you know, turning things on its ear and suggesting that that is the falling away, mm-hmm. you know, which, you know, Paul turns the tables as on the Judaizers, and he says, watch out for those dogs, mm-hmm. you know. And so, whereas the Jews would have seen the Gentiles as dogs, as unclean, kind mm-hmm. of, you know, beasts, uncivilized beasts, Paul is saying, no, it's those Judaizers who are the dogs. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who mutilate flesh. You know, that's what dogs do.
Yeah.
So, you know, he completely reverses it so that he creates another category and kind of looks back at those who saw themselves as superior as the unclean. Mm-hmm. So the author of Hebrews, to me, seems to be suggesting that they enter his rest in terms of the faith life so that we enter his rest. Now, this is why Paul could say one person observes one day above another. Another person observes every day alike. Let everyone be fully convinced in his own mind. You know, that seems to be kind of dissolving this sense that there should be one particular day of rest as a requirement. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's the irony. You know, rest for very observant Jews, Sabbath doesn't feel much like rest. I would imagine, if you can think.
You mean it's so stressful because you're trying to make sure you don't break the Sabbath?
You have to get ready for it, right? But also, it's burdensome in the sense that, you know, like you can't turn on a light switch. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certain things that you would probably prefer to do that would be very maybe meaningful to you or whatever, but because you're given these confines, mm-hmm. you know, it's good, I think, that to have that, but it's probably, as Jesus makes this case, right? So Jesus and his disciples are walking through the fields, and we've talked about why Jesus was no longer an observant Jew because he was a convert to Christianity. I know that's all that's all a mess, but all that to say is when I say a convert to Christianity, that he was baptized in the Holy Spirit, that he's following the Holy Spirit in this implicit sonship faith in his Father, and in having done so, he's now transcended the law through his earthly walk after his baptism. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so Jesus is free to kind of ignore a lot of the things that maybe an observant Jew would be hung up on, right? And so he and his disciples are walking through this wheat field or whatever it is, and his disciples are picking heads of grain. Mm-hmm. And they're rubbing it between their hands, and they're eating it, which was their right in the law, right? The law said that you're supposed to leave the corners of your fields, and if someone travels through, they can get whatever grain they can carry. It's just taking care of the poor. So the disciples were free to do that. They weren't stealing, and Jesus apparently encouraged them to do that. I mean, here's some observant Jews. Either they were observant Jews and Jesus had to encourage them to do that, or they weren't observant Jews and we just think they were. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, Jesus makes the case. He says that Sabbath, and he does this when he heals on the Sabbath as well. He says that Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. Now, what is he indicting? You know, do you think what point is he making to these Israelites?
Well, this overbearing approach to the law and God's law, and keeping God's laws, mm-hmm. that focuses on keeping the laws rather than like the spirit of the law, like doing good and so. Yeah, it's he's saying it's for our benefit. It's not for others to use against other people.
Right, right. So, you know, if you see somebody suffering and maybe they've got an illness that you could alleviate somehow, mm-hmm. but they're not going to die from it before tomorrow. You know, what's the righteous thing to do? Is it to care for them now or to say, I'll be back tomorrow? Right.
Right.
That would, if you say I'm coming back tomorrow, that suggests that man was made for the Sabbath. And Jesus says, no, the Sabbath was made for man, that mm-hmm. God endorsed this for the sake of humankind and not to cause us greater suffering. Mm-hmm. But a very hyper-observant treatment of the Sabbath where people are kind of on pins and needles. They don't, you know, we're always parsing what, you know, can I brush my teeth? Is this a, you know, is this a burden to pick up a toothbrush? There are all these Talmudic kinds of expositions, especially in very observant Judaism. And that can become burdensome in and of mm-hmm. itself, where Jesus says, woe to you scribes, you bind up heavy burdens, mm-hmm. lay them on men's shoulders. You know, that's the kind of, the law itself can become a massive burden to somebody's life. Mm-hmm. And so I think the author of the Hebrew, you know, the Hebrew writer is not saying that they should blow this stuff off. I don't think that the Jews were ever encouraged to just forsake their cultural heritage and their religious observance. But there's this sense that if you are thrown out, which was what was happening to the Hebrew church. So the primary way the Jews would punish somebody who they thought was unorthodox would be to cast them out of synagogue. So they're no longer allowed to come to the gathering, which synagogue is where it's where you network, it's where your friends are, you know, mm-hmm. it's where you encounter the Torah. You know, you can't go and just read the scriptures. Nobody had a copy. So you're being cut off from really your whole observance, you know? And so there's a real, I think there had to have been a lot of angst over that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were being thrown out of their guilds. You know, how are they going to work? You know, their boss is at synagogue. They've been thrown out of synagogue. Their boss has been told to shun them, you know, or, you know, whatever that they're working in a craft or whatever. They're out, mm-hmm. you know, slaves. I don't know what they did. And at any rate, I think that would have had to cause a lot of angst if you thought that if you're engagement with God was wrapped up in going to a particular place and being among a particular set of people. Mm-hmm. And now you've been cast out of that set of people. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Right. And so the author of the Hebrew letter is saying, hey, let's go to him outside the camp. Right. When you get to there in the later chapters of Hebrews, such a beautiful thing. It's just such a beautiful, just such a well-written letter because, you know, there's all this buildup and this Old Testament background and these kind of obscure stories. And he's making all these points about how the temple stood as a shadow and all of that. And then he says, now let's go to him outside the camp where he was offered. Right. And by that, he means let's worship him through our day. Right. In the ordinary warp and woof of life. So he says the marriage bed is holy, you know. So we're going to worship God, have sex with your wife. You know, if you want to worship God, obey the elders who are over you. You know, if you want to worship God, then obey the rulers around. You know, do good. Show hospitality to people. Let people into your house, you know. Those kinds of things. And that would have been particularly important with this social upheaval because there were people in your church who probably lost their jobs because of their faith. Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? You know, if the church doesn't take them in, then Jesus has kind of given them a raw deal. And Jesus promised that everyone who lost, you know, father or mother or houses and things like that for the kingdom will receive hundredfold more. I don't think that's just in the renewal. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's supposed to be now. Same with the rest. I think that he's calling people to have an ease about things, not to be, not to despise God. I think he again and again says, hey, God's still holy. You know, he's a consuming fire. What you've come to is very serious and grave, you know, and that you're in the direct presence of God. But when it comes to observing these particulars, it's okay to be at rest, you know. Mm-hmm. That if you have a general awe and reverence for God, if you come to Him with fear and trembling, if you cry out to Him, and He is your supply, then these particulars are not as important. So I would say that that's somewhat of a faith rest life. If you've not been a legalist, you probably can't fully appreciate that. But all that to say is I think that the reason that a Sabbath day is not enjoined on God's people in the New Testament is because we are supposed to be at rest all the time, that's a requirement. That rest is a task, right? It's why he says, make every effort to enter into God's rest.
Living by faith is rest.
Right.
Rest in God, trust, leaving it in God's hands.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, and this, this is kind of difficult. This is a difficult topic for me because I'm not like this at all. You know, it's always been a besetting sin of mine, I guess, to need to achieve or accomplish. You know, so we'll pray about this later, Ken, uh-huh. Me and you. You know, but the truth is the truth, and you know, Adam was created for work, right? Uh-huh. You know, you read the Genesis 2, and the story doesn't open on a man standing there with nothing to do, and God creates a garden. The story opens with a plot of land that is untended.
Uh huh. Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And God creates a man to tend it.
Yeah.
So, we get things kind of backward. We think everything was created for us, but at least the Genesis 2 version of the creation of humankind, or at least of the those who were called to be in this relationship with God, is very much that we were created for work, not work created for us, right? Right. At the same time, the curse is that there would be toil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so there's a difference between...
It wouldn't be restful. Like the curse after the fall and God comes and curses them, the description is, this is not going to be restful for you.
Right. Right. So then there's this, with the fall, I mean, God obviously, it seems that he endorsed the seventh day there, but he didn't enjoin it on humankind until Moses, right? It doesn't seem that he did. But there's this kind of, once the fall happens, rest is needed. You know, I don't think that mm-hmm. Adam needed to rest from the tasks that he had in the garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were working by faith. They were resting all the time. Not necessarily working all the time, but there wasn't a legalistic requirement for a day of rest. There was no need for that.
Right. I mean, what is some, you know, some people garden for leisure. Uh-huh. I don't understand that, but they do. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
And let's say you had a law that said, you know, you can work 6 days. On the seventh day, you cannot garden, you know, mm-hmm. but normally you would garden on the seventh day because that's for you. That's life-giving. That's mm-hmm. restful. That's relaxing. Having to sit in a chair, you know, or read or something is a burden,
right,
for you.
Yeah.
You know, if I was going to get a little kid, to come on to point, I would give him a timeout. Right. So that's not necessarily, he's not, oh, thank goodness. You know, so I really was getting worked up. You know, you really did me a favor here. You know? Mm-hmm. So, there's a real rest that comes in Christ. If the things that we do are themselves, they are life-giving. You know, the actions, the work that we do is life-giving. And the only way for that to happen is if we're able to get to a place where it's not all make or break. mm-hmm. You know, if I'm all freaked out that, you know, if this customer goes away or this deal doesn't go through or whatever, and everything, every deal is like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm being harried and harangued by this invisible taskmaster, mm-hmm. and that's toil. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the curse on Adam was, cursed is the ground because of you, thorns and thistles it will bear, that the product of the work becomes much harder to obtain. And that's the difference between work and toil. mm-hmm. is that the results, the well-being, really, you know, he says, by the sweat of your brow, you'll eat from, you know, eat bread and all that. So that's all toil. But Jesus comes and says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. These things will be added to you. Seems to be a reversal of the curse right there, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. What does that mean for us practically in life? You know, how should we structure our week and our year mm-hmm. as believers in Christ? So, there you go. That's not hypothetical. What do you think?
We're just exploring this, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In a way, we're saying theologically, like, redemption looks like we work in a restful way. Does that imply we don't need leisure time to rest? I don't think we mean that, but a person could hear that implied by what we're saying. Like, really sure. living by faith is like being refreshed all the time by Christ. Mm-hmm. And maybe really living by faith would be, you know,
right.
So that we're not brain dead at the end of the day and feel like all we can do is watch TV.
Right. Yeah. Now you quit preaching and gone to Madeline.
But, you know, on the other hand, we're living in the overlap of the ages.
Right.
The old age and the new age are in overlap, and so we're experiencing toil at the same as well. And we're pushing against the toil, the curse, by living by faith, resting in Christ. And so there should be a difference in how we work. And yet, nevertheless, I think we will also experience the toil and need rest.
Well, and that's, I think rest can be a discipline. You know, one way I think to push back against this onslaught, you know, of living in a fallen world where, you know, we could, with faith, push back against all the expectations around us, live in this joyful bubble, you know, feel God's pleasure through all the things we do and be refreshed in it. But we're constantly kind of being besieged by other people's demands.
Mm-hmm. Work, yeah, right. Yeah, work all the time, produce, earn, achieve, perform, mm-hmm. and rest as a discipline to say, I'm not going to live by the world's standards and expectations.
Right.
I'm going to take time off. I'm
right.
going to be with my family. I'm going to be with God. I'm going to enjoy things. I'm going to enjoy life.
Right.
That's another theme we haven't yet got to, like, enjoying the world God made,
mm-hmm.
being grateful, being thankful, playing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a statement of worship and trust and gratitude.
Right. Yeah. Well, and they're all expressions of God's grace. And, you know, Paul encourages the Galatians, you know, he says, don't frustrate the grace of God. So, you know, there is this generosity that is kind of rebuffed when we decide we're going to just, you know, work all the time. That there's something imbalanced about that. If somebody says, well, I work all the time because this is my leisure and this is how I rest and all that, I'm dubious of that, you know, because life just doesn't come to us that way, that there are lots of other modes that life presents before us. So if somebody is very unidimensional, imbalanced, it suggests that they are not operating in that freedom and that faith, but they are driven by some pathology.
Uh-huh.
Just because, you know, our families, like you said, they want to spend time with us. If you have small children in the home, you know, we don't take Johnny inside and say, you know, Johnny, what would really encourage you and I think build you up is if you were to, you know, dig a ditch over here and you'll be really joyful. You know, it's just not, you know, kids, they do play, you know, they want to play, but also us, you know, we do have an Abba Father and just like we rejoice in our children's enjoyment. So I think he does with us.
Yeah. So, you know, we're coming at this from the angle of people who are oriented toward work and who need to recognize the value of leisure. And there's a lot, and that's common, and our culture pressures us to be oriented toward work.
Mm-hmm.
Our culture, just like with health and weight loss and body, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, also at the same time pressures us toward to focus on leisure,
right?
And, and hobbies. And so there's this push and pull because there's all kind. You could, you know, the Bass Pro catalog comes and it says, you know, focus on leisure, max out your fishing technology, right, and just become the best fisherman ever,
right,
or whatever your thing is. And, you know, and we can get wrapped up in our hobbies. We can make an idol out of our hobbies. And we can think that's where life will be found, is those things we do in the evenings and on the weekends with our time away from our job. Right. And that's misguided also.
Right.
Because it's not drawing from God, focused on God, life in God. Instead, it's finding our life in this world, in something in this world. This will make me happy. This will satisfy and validate me.
Right. Yeah. It's ironic. You know, we've been talking about how the gospel is really the one balanced approach to life. It's the one thing that kind of hits that, you know, that roadbed between the ditches. And we've given several reasons for that. Go back and listen to other episodes if you don't know what I'm talking about. But the irony is that the capitalist society, capitalism itself, is a lose-lose. You know, because we're always being sold to, right? And so the people who sell the fast food are wanting us to eat more of it. But the people who sell the health and weight loss products, and they, you know, they want us to lose weight. And so we get these messages that are like, you should eat this cheeseburger and also you should be skinny. And, you know, it's a lose-lose, right? Same as what you're talking about. You know, you should have all these products so that your life can be meaningful, but you're going to have to work really hard to pay for those products, you know? And so now you're kind of enslaved in that way. And sooner or later, you don't even have time to use the things that you purchased. And so it really does begin to stretch people across, you know, the just very thin. And so that's a problem. But I think with the gospel, what we get is meaningful time at work. But it's meaningful because it's not essential, you know. So I'll give a little anecdote of my history with work, and more an ancient history, I guess. Back when I was at UPS, they had this thing. All the routes were time studied, so every day you had a number for how fast you did compared to the expectation. For how fast you delivered the route compared to what you were expected to do.
Mm-hmm. Like your score today was 98%. You were just almost exactly what we expected.
Right. Well, it was, I mean, you were given a certain, so that day was actually calculated to the minute. Like, this is a 9-hour and 27-minute day.
Okay.
And if you get that day done in 8 hours and 55 minutes, your bonus is, you know, whatever it is, right? And so you would see that discrepancy. Mm-hmm. And if you're over, then you're like, hey, you were over loud. What, you know, what happened? You have it was bad traffic or whatever, right? So you're kind of in trouble. If you're over loud, if you're under loud, they pay you for what that day was calculated to be. So now you're rewarded in that you can sit home and still be on the clock, right? So that was incentive for me to just work my butt off, right? I just work so hard every day.
Right.
Now, at the same time, I was very legalistic, and so I was of the mind that you had to drive the speed limit. So then that worked against me, but it put the burden on me. So it's a vice, right? That my religion was a burden in the sense that it put a limit on what I could do. But my but in this world, I was also being driven very hard to you know, get certain things done. So physically, it was very challenging to, you know, hit bonus every day. And then, we went on strike. This is, you know, ancient history, 1997. And, I was out of work for 2 weeks, you know, and really had time to kind of reflect on life and what this is all about, you know, pray. 'Cause I don't know if you can relate, but when you're in a workplace for very long, it becomes the whole world, you know, everything's self-referential, stuff that doesn't matter to anybody outside of your work is everything to you. Right. And that happens again and again to me. But anyway, this having this time away, this 2 weeks, really got me in a place where I could get up above it and reflect on scripture and on the gospel and stuff. And when I came back, I was very much like, you know, if I can do this for God, good. If I can't, it's not worth it, you know. And I would just do everything unto him. So when I was trying to always meet, make bonus every day, let's say someone who is not prepared to give me the money for a cash on demand, you know, COD package, becomes my immediate enemy and I want them to suffer, you know. They were just careless, but all of a sudden I see them as malicious and just everything that happened was constant frustration. You know, a dump truck pulls out in front of me and now all of a sudden, you know, I got to wait till for him to accelerate. Now, that's obviously the worst human being on the planet for this moment, you know. So it made for a very un-Christian kind of a day, that approach to work. Also, previously, when I was so driven by these other incentives that my days would just go, they were gone. I couldn't really remember what happened in a particular day while I was at work. Like, my life was just going away. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Click with Adam Sandler, but he gets this remote control where he can fast forward everything. We may have spoken of it before. And it's really a metaphor for the way people kind of check out in things that they don't really like, and then they kind of pay attention to stuff they do like. Yeah. But what happens is they miss their whole life, you know, because most of life is things that are perhaps a drudge or something that, you know, we may not choose to do. So, but what I realized when I came back, and I didn't really notice it until I came back, and I was like, look, if I can do this day for God, then it's good. If I can't, I'm just, you know, I'm going to quit or do something else. And so I really started doing all of these things for God. So whereas previously I might have left a package on the front porch, even though it was visible from the road, I then afterward would put it, you know, on the back porch or around the side, or, you know, I would find a way, I would take extra time to cover it. Why? Because even though no one was watching and everybody else did it that way, this was the Lord's package, you know? And they're just a multitude of other little things like that, that all of these prescriptive rules about how to deliver and pick up packages became my worship. Right. And then we got to a place where we had to report a lunch hour every day, even if we didn't take it or not. But for me, I felt like, well, if I'm going to report one, I have to take one, which was just massive. I mean, it was so painful because of just this drivenness, you know, to just have to sit for an hour. Mm-hmm. And yet that broke me out of a lot of that. So
it was a good discipline for you.
Oh yeah. What I found was, is that I was able to reclaim the whole day for God, but really for myself, because, in doing these things that pushed back against that and accepting that this is for God and that he is my supply, not UPS. Then all of that became rest, and I had the whole day back. The day became meaningful. It became my time, but it really happened through really being forced to take time, downtime. And so maybe this brings the two kind of threads together in the sense that work shouldn't be toil and downtime is important.
Yeah.
You know, because downtime is, I think, that thing that reminds us that work shouldn't be toil.
Right. You know? Right. It provides us fresh perspective and reorients us so that when we go back to work, we work as unto the Lord, like you're describing.
Yeah.
And so we should rest and recreate. And we should make sure that when we are resting and recreating, that that's really happening.
Right.
And again, it goes back to the doomstrolling illustration, you know. Is what we're doing when in our off time really recreating us, renewing us, reorienting us, and refreshing us for life.
Right. And I don't know. And it can be a challenge because there's this constant onslaught. So maybe having a routine and having people hold us accountable to take time off and time away despite demands, you know. Being free to push back on an employer and say, you know, well, I'm just not going to make that deadline, or I'm not going to, you know, participate in that particular activity. I'm not going to go on that retreat or whatever it is because, you know, this other thing is more important to me right now. Maybe you don't get promoted, or maybe you do, you know, but
maybe you don't get promoted because you don't live by the world standards. Mm-hmm. Maybe you do get promoted because your refreshment changes the way you work, and you actually find that you're more creative in ways at work than you would have been otherwise, and new solutions emerge from you that everybody's amazed by.
Right, exactly. So I think it's important to remember that Jesus, you know, as he's, and this is, you know, we're trying to parse the gospel and not the Bible or the gospels, but I do think there's an important story in along this theme in the book of Mark. It's just an incidental mention in Mark chapter 7, verse 24, and it says, "From there he arose and went away to the region of Tyre and Sidon." Okay, so why would somebody in the Holy Land go to Gentile region? You know, we're not told why, right? It just says he got up and went to Tyre and Sidon.
Okay, it doesn't say he went off to be alone. It doesn't say he went off to preach. It's just not clear.
Right.
And that in that statement.
Right, in that statement. And then he encounters, as you would expect, a Syrophoenician woman. Probably encountered a lot of Syrophoenicians. Why? Because he's in their land, right? Mm-hmm. He's in their country. He's left Israel, and he's out in the Gentile world, and it's at the coast. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Jesus went, and apparently he knew somebody there or something. It says, and he entered a house and did not want anyone to know, yet he could not be hidden. Okay. So here's somebody with a very busy schedule, right? He's a celebrity, and he's very sought after, and what does he do? You know, he gets an Airbnb at the beach. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, what? You know, this is, to me, this is, it kind of, it's a paradigm shift from what I think of Jesus, you know. Mm-hmm. And even as this woman comes and she's pleading with him to help her, and he's like, you know, I need you to go away. And yet her persistence, you know, he does cast the demon out of her child. And of course he has to probably leave because now everybody knows, and you know, they're all beating down his door. Right. Mm-hmm. But here's the Son of God who's very much on a mission. You know, John depicts him as not even eating, you know, as he's preaching to the Samaritans. Mm-hmm. And his disciples are like, "Rabbi, eat." And he says, "I have food you don't know anything about." Mm-hmm. Right. And so you realize maybe in both of those vignettes, you get this kind of faith, rest, life, in that Jesus is nourished by the will of God. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there, you know, this onslaught of human demand just calls for a retreat sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And even Jesus retreated, which is a great balancing point here. Mm-hmm. When we say there's our faith, rest, life through the day, even in the midst of our work. Mm-hmm. And we make that point, and it's important. Nevertheless, even Jesus retreated.
Right, right.
To reap, to be renewed.
Right. So I think on a day-by-day basis, it's, you know, it's a good discipline to say yes to some non-work things and say no to some work things. You know, pick mm-hmm. a few work things to say no to. Mm-hmm. Pick a few non-work things to say yes to. I know my wife probably wouldn't agree, but I try to do that through the day. Like first thing in the day, if she's up, and we'll sit and have coffee and talk, you know. But sometimes that's at, you know, 8 a.m., you know. But I'm going to work till 6 or 7, so I get myself permission to just sit and have coffee.
Say yes to some non-work things.
Right, right. Yep. And there's also kind of continual appeal on me, you know, to be doing this for this person, you know, and especially my employer and other things. There's just, you know, do this. So it's just an ongoing call to say, well, I can't do that. And, or if I do it, it's going to be, you know, weeks out, and I hope that's okay. And mm-hmm. so just have to be okay with that. Know that you're doing your very best. And really watch, you know, the author of Hebrews is talking about how we need to watch out for each other, lest any of us be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Mm-hmm. And there are very, very few things that are more deceitful than the call to be productive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's maybe an admonition we need to offer one another. Mm-hmm. It's just to be like, yeah, hey, I saw you got a promotion. Congratulations. Wonderful. You know, I'll be praying for you. Are you concerned about the demands this is going to make on your time? How are you Mm-hmm. How are you putting things into place so that, you know, you're not kind of drawn in and you know, more time is being taken than should be. Mm-hmm. You know, how are you investing particularly in your own spiritual growth and in the advancement of the kingdom, both through your work, but also how are you creating margin mm-hmm. outside of those things, you know? So I think that would be, it's an important conversation for us to have, especially when we see our brother experience a degree of success. Mm-hmm. Because I think that they're probably closer to being in danger than somebody who's in the doldrums. mm-hmm. So I don't know. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like an accountability question. You know, it's not what we think of when we think of a list of accountability questions. Mm-hmm. Is how are you making space for rest? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to be accountable to that.
Right. Yeah. And are you responding to urgency, or are you trusting in God? You know, this tyranny of the urgent, mm-hmm. right? And generally the urgent is manufactured by somebody else's expectations or perceptions rather than an actual thing, you know? So we can, you know, talk to somebody about their work and say, are you feeling like you're supported by God in your work? You know, are you doing your work unto Him? Mm-hmm. You know?
On the flip side, our culture has, you know, really the push and pull, right? On the flip side, it's really easy, maybe not for you, Nathan, maybe you don't relate to this, because I kind of feel like you're saying you don't relate to this, but a lot of us get caught up in hobbies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's and then you look back over your life and you're like, yeah, I just went from one thing to another, right?
Right.
You know, yeah. It was mountain biking for a while, then it was fishing for a while, then it was hunting for a while, and now it's whatever. And there's a lot of emphasis on hobbies and being going all in,
right?
And being, I don't know, expert and masterful and accomplished at your hobbies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we can really easily get our identity wrapped up in being an accomplished thus and so mm-hmm. hobbyist.
Yeah.
And thinking that this is where this is life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, there's I think companies do this for their own self-serving reasons, but there's all this emphasis on work-life balance, and even some of the big companies have gone to unlimited time off, and so I think they do that for their own reasons. But there's just, I don't know, just a strong emphasis in our culture on travel, leisure, hobby, and this is life. Like that's mm-hmm. what life's really about. And sometimes, right. sometimes you hear someone say, like, you know, that's the meaning of life. And, really it's not mm-hmm. really yeah. the meaning of life is not what you do in your travels, in your leisure time.
Yeah.
But, I think it's some people's best attempt to say, you know, the meaning of life is not this work that we do. It's the life. It's the real life we live outside of work.
Yeah.
So there's a flip side that we haven't really focused on, but there could be an accountability question there too.
Right.
Right. Like on the flip side, are you indulging hobbies and leisure in such a way that it's your God?
Right. Well, I think that we're all involved in the same vocation. And so there's an accountability there. And I've been asking, you know, myself these questions as well. I don't tend to get into hobbies. I think I only have like one, and it's, barbecue and smoking food. Generally, there's other purposes why I do that, though, and it's not just for my downtime, you know. But at any rate, I think that there's a stewardship question that really comes in with these hobbies and stuff, and uh-huh. that...
Oh, video games. I forgot video games.
Video games, yeah. For me, and again, I'm in balance the other way, so I'm just like, you know, what? Yeah, I don't understand it at all, but I will veg in front of the TV for, you know, 5 hours every night, 6 hours every night if I, you know, because I'm just too tired to get up and go to bed, honestly. And so there's... that's not investing in my, you know, whatever either. But yeah, hobbies, a lot of it, because they tend to be expensive, you know, that's the thing for me is that, the money could be invested in the kingdom. And so it's not that that's it's not that God's short on cash, you know, or that we can't ever buy something nice or whatever. But I do think that there is a moderating a consideration that we should say, wait, you know, what could I be doing with this? Uh-huh. Could I participate in this hobby in a way that, you know, it's not going to be such a major outlay of money? Or and for me, I think that the consideration should be about community, especially if you have downtime. And so I remember when I was preaching and I wanted to find some sort of a graphic that represented, I think it was something like paradise, you know, so you type in paradise in the Google image and it's always somebody alone out in nature.
Right. No people.
You know, what paradise is to get these jerks away from me, mm-hmm. you know? And to me, it seems that hobbies, these kind of activities, whether it's hiking or camping, fishing, everything, all of that, has a relational component. So Jesus, as he goes to, you know, the region of Sidon, he's got his disciples with him. You know, there are times when he goes out, but it's not to be alone, but he's not alone. I mean, he's with his Father. He's praying. Just this, sometimes I think that hobbies can become something that we do maybe just for ourselves or whatever to the exclusion of other people. For me, I really think that if you can do it and maybe get a double benefit, spend time with your kids or spend time with your, you know, spouse or invest in somebody in the church, take someone under your wing.
Yeah.
If you're very free with the various accessories and accoutrements of this, you know, mm-hmm. and you're like, here, you know, use this reel. It's a lot better, you know, mm-hmm. and well, why don't you take that home and play with it, you know, and stuff. It's like, if you're just always open-handed and this thing becomes kind of a vessel for a greater ministry or greater work, then great. But yeah, somebody who's just, and sometimes hobbies can, because they take away from this idea of work as worship, you know, because everybody's working for the weekend, you know.
Yeah.
If I'm so into my hobbies and my leisure time activity, it's very hard to get to a place where my work becomes my worship and it's refreshing and I'm, uh-huh. you know, because I'm just trying to get it over with so I can do the thing I like to do.
Right. Working for the weekend, right, is a flip side, right?
Right.
And that too is making an idol. Mm-hmm. It's just a different idol.
Yeah. Well, you can't work for the weekend and you can't work through the weekend.
There you go.
Remember that.
That'll be our tagline. You can't work for the weekend. Uh-huh. Also, you can't work through the weekend. You need the weekend.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys, for listening. And if you've got some commentary on this or some questions for us, maybe you have a story you want to tell that would be illustrative, email us to discussion@recoverfaith.org. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.